All right. We are back. Episode 3, Crossover Conversations Podcast. We are the Wyatts. I am Devin.
And I'm Katie.
Thanks, guys, for listening. We've got a lot to cover tonight, Katie. So let's jump right into it. I think the biggest news was news that actually came out pretty much right after we recorded the last episode, which is the Olympic team was announced. The official Olympic team, I should say. Do you have any immediate thoughts on who is in, who is out, that kind of thing?
I think Arike was robbed.
I agree.
She's our hometown girl.
Yeah, she's hometown girl, and she's killing it right now. She's averaging like 30-something points a game.
Yeah, she's doing well. I know the big talk is Caitlin Clark not making it in, but Arike's been in the league for a couple years. She's done well. She's proven herself, so that felt like a disappointment.
Yeah, I think the Caitlin Clark not making it's being overblown, personally. But yes, I 100% agree with you on your Arike analysis there. She's, if she's not leading the league still in points, she's pretty dang close. She is, in most cases, carrying the majority of Dallas's offense. She's a great player. She was at college, too, at Notre Dame. I think she got robbed. I think there are some good players on the team, on the Olympic team. Don't get me wrong, but I think Arike should have definitely been at least in more conversations than she was.
There was a stat just a couple days ago by the WNBA saying that she made history passing Cynthia Cooper-Dyke for the most games, scoring 20-plus points to start a season.
Wow. Yeah, that's impressive.
I know.
Yeah, she's on a hot streak right now.
Good Hopefully time. In 4 years, she'll be on that team.
For real. Another interesting thing I noticed with the Olympic team is there are 4 Las Vegas Aces players on the team. That's crazy to me. 4 of their 5 starters are on the Olympic team.
How many are on the team? 12?
There are 12, I believe. Yep, that made the final roster.
Yeah.
So that's a third of the team is Las Vegas Aces.
Which is interesting, too, because they lost 3 games within the last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get into how that kind of played into their Commissioner's Cup standings a little bit later. But yeah, they've gone through a little rough patch. It was the first time since, I saw the stat. I think I want to say it was 2018. They've lost 3 games in a row, so it's been a while. I think back then they weren't even the Las Vegas Aces. I think they were still the San Antonio Silver Stars at that point. So yeah, they've gone through a rough patch, so hopefully they can turn it around for both their fans, their players, that kind of thing. Because I think they're a good team.
Well, they beat the Mercury last night.
They did
so
beat the Mercury last night.
That streak was snapped.
Yeah.
So good for them, back on track.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them, back on track. Any other thoughts on the Olympic team before we move on?
I mean, not really. Like, I think they chose a good team. Yeah. I think Arike was snubbed, but like, how do you argue that the others are not the best players in the league?
Right, and the people that are choosing the team clearly know what they're doing. The U.S. is going for, I think it's either their 8th or 9th straight gold medal. So they obviously know what they're doing when it comes to picking the best team in the world. So I trust them in that matter. I do want to point this out. I didn't know this until I looked into it. I don't know if you do, but did you realize that in the WNBA, so first of all, this year, with it being an Olympic year, there is a break in the WNBA season. So there are no games being played from the middle of July, July 17th, I believe it is, until the middle of August because of the Olympics. But the All-Star game for the WNBA is right before the Olympics. And what actually ends up happening is the Olympic team plays the remaining WNBA All-Stars in what they consider their All-Star game.
No way.
Yeah. And so there are talks right now if Caitlin Clark makes the WNBA All-Star team, she could, you know, kind of get her revenge, if you want to say, if she goes out.
That is a completely unfair matchup. The WNBA or the Olympic team versus just whoever is left. That is just completely unfair.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with you. I think it's going to be a blowout. I think it's honestly used more of like a warm-up game for the Olympic team to kind of get some time playing together. Mm-hmm. That's my personal theory.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And of course they're going to make it about Caitlin Clark and whatever. But honestly, what I'm interested to see is if Caitlin Clark gets if she works better, I guess, with some different
players.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, if it's anything like basically any other sports All-Star game, it's basically a big joke where it's, you know, players are giving half effort and not playing any kind of defense at all. So I don't know how legit it's going to be. I guess we'll have to just watch it and see.
Yep. But that should be fun, though.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting. I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah.
I thought you might find that interesting.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready for this next segment?
Sure.
Good old sideline sagas. I think you've got a good one for us. What you got?
I do. So just this past week, we watched the Indiana Fever play the Connecticut Sun. Mm-hmm. And after the game, I saw this tweet saying that Nalissa Smith plays soft against Dejanay Carrington. And I felt like there was something going on there. So I looked it up and I saw a couple of clips. The first one was where Dejanay Carrington fell down and Nalissa Smith came over to pick her up. But it wasn't just like, let's grab each other's hand, pull you up. Nalissa Smith picked her up from behind, almost like a bear hug, like picked her up by her abdomen. Just a little bit odd, but it's like maybe they knew each other. Yeah,
especially for team or players on different teams.
Right. Kind of weird. That's helpful to differentiate. Nalissa Smith is on Indiana Fever's team. Dejanay Carrington is on the Connecticut Sun. So the second thing that I saw, which was also interesting, was that Dejanay Carrington scored a bucket on Erica Wheeler. In the process, Erica Wheeler fell down. Dejanay started chirping. I don't know if it was at Erica, if it was at the crowd, but Erica Wheeler, who plays for the Fever, did not like it. So she went up and got in Dejanay Carrington's face. Okay. Nalissa Smith runs over and almost like pushes off Erica Wheeler from talking to Dejanay. So it was this like...
Was it more of like a, hey, I'm pushing my teammate away so they don't get it like teed up? Or was it pushing them away as more of like a, hey, stop talking to that person that way. I don't like how you're speaking.
I mean, if I had just watched the game, I would have thought she was just telling her player like, hey, don't get in trouble deal. Okay. But I found out that Dejanay Carrington and Nalissa Smith used to date.
Ooh.
Okay. And so they dated as recent as 2023.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But what is interesting is before this game, they did not follow each other on any social media.
Oh, interesting.
But after the game, they both followed each other. A couple days later, the Connecticut Sun played in their home stadium. Nalissa Smith showed up just in the crowd.
No way.
And then just yesterday, Dejanay Carrington came to the Indiana Fever game.
Interesting.
So it is super interesting. Yeah. It seems like maybe there's a rebudding romance there.
Uh-huh.
And the WNBA is so interesting. I think it's unlike most every league in that these players date their own teammates. They play their opposing, they date their opposing teams. They maybe are looking to date someone or breaking up. It's just super interesting and not something that's super common in a lot of these other sporting leagues.
It's personal drama entering the workplace in a way.
I know. And I'm super curious if like before certain games, like when lovers play each other, if the coaches have to talk to their players any certain way or if like
remember,
the team member
us versus them.
Well, I mean, I don't know. As a teammate, I would like, I don't want you playing soft against the other team or like the potential, but anyway, I just thought that that was interesting. The Fever also got completely blown out. So the Connecticut Sun, we watched that game together.
Right. Lost by like 20 points.
Right. So anyway, it wasn't pretty either way, but that's my drama. It's a sideline saga, but it certainly had some on the court impacts.
Interesting. I've got an old school, former saga for you.
Okay.
I think we need to back up a little bit before this even happens to kind of get a full picture. Have you heard of the Malice in the Palace in the NBA?
I know there's a Netflix documentary, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Did it happen in Detroit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So the Detroit, old Detroit arena, I should say, was called the Palace at Auburn Hills.
Okay.
There was, long story short, a big fight towards the end of the game. A bunch of players suspended. Players ended up going into the stands, throwing punches at fans.
Okay.
It was a huge mess, big ordeal, that kind of thing. That happened in 2004. All right. 2 years later, in 2008, at that time, Detroit Shock played in the same arena, the Palace at Auburn Hills, against the LA Sparks, and there was another brawl, WNBA style, against, Candace Parker and a Detroit Shock player named Cheryl Ford that kind of started the whole thing.
Mm. Candace Parker played for the Sparks, I assume?
Did. Yes, okay. She did. And at that time, this is right after Candace Parker left college, or I shouldn't say left, but got drafted was no longer in college, was in WNBA. And so she, at this point in time, is basically at the height of her career. She's like the, think Caitlin Clark at that point in time, the WNBA. And essentially what ended up happening was there was some very physical blockouts a couple of possessions in a row. And there was some free throws being shot. Cheryl Ford blocked out Candace Parker in a very physical way. Candace Parker ends up falling down and grabbing a hold of Cheryl and pulling her with her. And that just kind of blew everything up. Players ended up clearing benches. A coach actually got involved. A coach was suspended. Let's see. He was suspended 2 games. And get this. Have you ever heard the name Rick Mahorn?
No.
Ooh, fun fact. Rick Mahorn was a former NBA player, an actual NBA champion in 1989, who then went on to become a assistant coach for the Detroit Shock, obviously. But he actually ended up leaving the bench. And honestly, it looks like, if you watch the video, an attempt to kind of separate people and break things up, it looks like accidentally, I don't want to say hits, but sort of hits a player. And that ended up causing him to be suspended 2 games. And the WNBA at the time said that he was escalating the situation, not de-escalating it like he was.
Yeah.
But anyway, I if you haven't seen the video, I suggest going to watch it, just if nothing else, for the pure entertainment purposes of it. I don't mean that in a weird, twisted way. I just mean, you know, it's just interesting to see, I guess. I mean, anytime there's a benches clearing brawl in baseball or basketball or whatever sport it is, you know, it ends up being on SportsCenter. And so,
right,
you know,
you're right.
People find it interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I obviously did. And so I would say, hey, go give it a watch.
Wow. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. We got the Lingo Lab, the Hoops Lingo Lab up next.
Oh, gosh.
What you got for me?
I don't have any.
You don't have any? Okay. Here's one that I think would be a good one for you. The first couple of games, I heard a lot of talk about teams blitzing Caitlin Clark.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea what blitzing means.
I had a feeling you would say that. And I was like, yeah, that would be a pretty good one to talk about in the Lingo Lab. So blitzing. You remember last week? Let's kind of piggyback off of that. We talked about screens and how it's basically when an offensive player stands in the way of a defender to kind of create some separation for the person with the ball.
Right, right.
So a blitz, well, let me back up a little bit. There are multiple ways to defend a screen, but one of them is called a blitz. And essentially what ends up happening is the defensive player guarding the player with the ball and the defensive player guarding the player who's screening on offense basically end up double teaming the person with the ball for a short period of time, kind of in an effort to create a turnover, some chaos, that kind of thing. It can be done to a specific player if you think that player might get a little flustered. It can be done just as part of just a general strategy, which is honestly kind of seems to be done quite a bit in WNBA from what I've seen. There are some teams that do it more than others, but I know they mentioned it quite a bit in the first, I don't know, probably 4 to 5-ish games of Caitlin Clark's career of, hey, these teams are blitzing her a lot more than anybody else. And I wonder if that was in an attempt to kind of create turnovers, which I'll mention this a little bit later, but in a way you could say it succeeded.
Yeah, no, certainly.
But anyway, I thought you'd like to learn about that. Was I correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hadn't heard of that word before.
And then I thought it might be a good idea. Last week, you mentioned in one segment, just post versus guards, big people versus average people, I believe is the way you phrased it. So I thought it might be a good idea to kind of dive a little bit further into the actual positions in basketball.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Okay. So let's just go with the 5 very traditional positions. Okay, you got a center.
Okay,
who is a post player?
Right,
that's usually the
they're a post player.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, a center would be considered a post.
Okay,
they are usually the tallest, biggest. They play underneath the basket, shoot lots of layups, that kind of thing. Get lots of rebounds.
Aaliyah Boston.
Yes,
is she a center?
Yes.
Okay,
should be a center. All right, then you have a power forward, which is, for all intents and purposes, very similar to a center. Also considered a post. Also shoots short to mid-range shots, gets lots of rebounds, that kind of thing. Also a bigger person, typically.
Okay.
All right. Then you have these 3 positions would be, next 3, would be considered guards, all right? You have a small forward, kind of similar to a power forward. Don't get those confused. You have a shooting guard and a point guard. All 3 of them are basically guards, even though one of them is considered a small forward.
Okay.
And then this can get really convoluted in today's game because you can play so many different lineups without a center. You know, I'm sure you've heard the term small ball before. No?
Okay. Nope, never have.
All right, well, maybe we should cover that next week then. Put that in your notes. but I just kind of wanted to dive a little bit further and kind of explain, hey, yes, there are posts and yes, there are guards, but there are even more differentiations between the two. And in today's, once you get higher up in basketball, usually you don't refer to them as, you know, oh, I play center, or oh, I play point guard. You refer to it as, oh, I play the number five, or oh, I play the number two. So every position is numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Got it. So with the guards, I know that there is the point guard, and that is the person who takes the ball down the court typically. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then the other two guards, do they have just like general responsibilities?
Yeah, I guess so. Generally they are, so traditionally speaking, a point guard isn't going to be the one who shoots the ball most. The point guard is going to be the person who, like you said, brings the ball down the court, creates opportunities for other people to score, whether it be that small forward or shooting guard, the two guards, or whether it be maybe the power forward and pick and roll type situation, which we talked about last week. So those two other guards, yes, they're more of shooters. They move around the court more without the ball, trying to get themselves open, that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Kind of? Okay. All right, that's all I had for Hoops Lingo Lab. Anything else you had?
No.
Nope. All right. Quick update on Commissioner's Cup. I think we have our two finalists, the New York Liberty and Minnesota Lynx.
Wow, that's kind of fun to see the Lynx in there. Yeah. I don't think I was expecting that.
Yep, and actually so in Commissioner's Cup's games, they actually tied with Seattle for the best record in the West, but have the head-to-head wins. They're the ones that move on.
Oh, and when you mean head-to-head win, you mean who scored more points?
Well, I mean who beat the other one.
Oh, so it's not point-based. It's who beat the other person.
Oh, that's actually a good question. It might be points-based in Commissioner's Cup.
Because on the Commissioner's Cup website, it just says diff. I don't know. And I think it has 67 with the Minnesota Lynx, uh-huh, and 36 with the Seattle Storm.
Oh, interesting. Do the teams below them have points that are lower than Seattle?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So maybe they do have some kind of point system then.
Wow. So Minnesota and the Liberty. So when do they play?
They play, what is today? Today's June 14th. I believe it is next Wednesday, I want to say, or maybe it's the Wednesday after that. Actually, the 26th might be it.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they got a little bit of time to strategize, I guess. And remember, there's what, $500,000 on the line here?
Yeah, that's pretty good for 2 weeks.
Yeah, not a bad little payday there if you end up winning this thing. So it's not like they're gonna take it easy on each other. Or at least I wouldn't expect them to. I would expect them to actually play hard.
Right.
Since there is something on
the line. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think it's gonna be good basketball. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I figured it was just gonna be like more obvious teams. I don't know. I feel like the Lynx is kind of, I think they're good, but I just wouldn't have expected
They're good, but I don't think they get as much media attention as some of these other teams in bigger markets, and so I don't think many people have paid attention to them.
Yeah.
Even though they are a good team. All right. I had a request from somebody who shall remain nameless that we need to talk more stats. And so in an effort to do that, I pulled some early season stats, and I'm going to call this the Where Do They Stand Rookie Edition.
Okay.
Just kind of where do these rookies stack up in the league, or which rookies are leading or coming close to leading in certain categories.
Okay.
All right. And so let's talk. I think this is the most I struggle to say surprising, because it's not necessarily surprising. It's surprising that they're this high on the list. Is Angel Reese currently is fifth in the entire league in rebounds per game at 9.6.
Wow.
Yeah.
Love that for her.
That's impressive. She is very close. In fact, this I pulled these before tonight's game. I think tonight she had 14 rebounds, so that might actually go
up.
So she might actually be averaging a double-double right now, which is incredible.
That is awesome.
For a rookie, nonetheless, but for really any player. Moving on, Cameron Brink has 2.9 blocks per game, which is actually second in the entire league.
Wow.
Also very impressive. That's kind of what she was known for in college, from my understanding. I didn't watch a ton of her in college, but that's kind of what I heard that was her kind of calling cue, if you will, was blocks and games. And then there's a couple of interesting ones. Caitlin Clark is 15th with 15.6 points per game.
15th in points scored, yes, is what you're saying.
Sorry.
Okay.
15th in the league, yes, with 15.6 points per game. Sorry, that's a lot of 15s.
Wow. No, that's super interesting because that really does kind of put her right on the outside of, you know, like top 12 top scorer. Yeah, right. So, yeah.
And all these players I'm mentioning, by the way, and their place in the league, they are the number one rookie. So Angel Reese is the highest ranked rookie. Cameron Brink is the highest ranked rookie in rebounds. Caitlin Clark is the highest ranked rookie in points per game. She's also the highest ranked rookie in turnovers per game at 5.5. But she's also the number one ranked player in the league in turnovers with 5.5 turnovers per game.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yep. And then she's fourth in the league in assists per game with 6. So that's pretty good.
Wow. She's fourth in the league in assists?
Yep. Fourth in the entire league.
Wow.
Yep.
So I don't think she's gotten very many double-doubles. And so... Mm-mm.
No. So that kind of surprises you?
It does surprise me. But yeah. I guess assists maybe just aren't as high. Yeah. As maybe they were for her in college.
Yeah.
Or for anyone, really.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think she's gotten any double-doubles, but she's gotten close a couple of times. And usually it's off of points and rebounds, surprisingly, not assists, which is also something that you don't see a whole lot of with guards.
Right. I think Angel has had quite a few double-doubles, from rebounds.
Yes.
And not from
rebounds,
assists.
Yep, from rebounds and points.
Right.
Yep. Wow. Which is what I would expect for someone playing her position. Angel Reese is also the highest ranked rookie in overall efficiency, but she's 23rd. So that category statistically is the furthest down that any rookie is. Does that make any sense? So
it does.
And I think that's kind of telling. Do you know what efficiency is?
No.
No?
Okay. Tell me what efficiency is.
It's a stat that basically looks at all of the good things you do. So points, assists, rebounds, and then measures those against all the bad things you do. Like turnovers, fouls, that kind of thing.
Wow, interesting.
So basically, how efficient are you at the good things without doing as much bad things?
Got it. I mean, that makes sense that would be the lowest in the rookies, right? I mean, they're new to the league, and so their negatives are probably...
Yep, there's a learning curve.
They're just hurting their positives a little bit in the efficiency segment.
Yep, I agree. So that's... I 100% agree. I wasn't as surprised to see that the highest ranked rookie was further down the list. I think that's important to note. I had something interesting that I saw this morning. I don't know if you read this or not because we haven't talked about it. The Washington Post report. Have you heard about this?
No.
Heard about this? Okay, here's an interesting one. Sorry, moving on from stats. The Washington Post came out with an article that was then picked up by, basically every major and even minor news network out there that the NBA commissioner, who in a sense is involved with the WNBA since the NBA owns the WNBA, has come out and said that even with all the increased attention that the WNBA is getting, they expect the league to still lose $50 million this year.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts there?
I mean, my first thought is maybe they paid too much money in charters. Airline charters.
Yeah, what did I know they mentioned somewhere early on that was going to cost them what, like 20 something million?
I have no idea. I can look it up, but I think it was going to cost a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually very curious, like if they took away charters, if it would be in the green.
Yeah, or close at least. I just thought it was interesting that they're still losing $50 million despite TV viewership tripling from this time last year. Merchandise sales are up 236% from this time last year. Ticket sales for games are up 17%.
How are ticket sales only up 17%? That's one that I struggle with.
Because if you look at it, we always hear these, you know, oh, there's 20,000 people at the Fever Wizards game, and oh, there's 17,000 people at the Liberty Fever game, which is true. But then you look at tonight's game where Washington played. Oh, who were they playing tonight? Chicago? Is that who it was?
Yes, Chicago.
You know how many fans were at that game?
How many?
4,200. So I know some people don't want me to say it.
That's their home stadium,
it is,
though.
It is. You're right.
And that's the capacity. That's at capacity.
You're right. So, I mean, it's not like they're drawing empty stadiums.
Right.
I did see a similar stat that said that stadiums are at 90% or above capacity. So it's not like you're right. It's not like they are playing against zero crowd in the stadium. Right. But I think we kind of have a skewed view of maybe
what we're seeing with the Caitlin Clark effect.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
I don't disagree. I just think it's like a if you build it, they will come situation where it's like maybe.
Yeah, it's a good argument.
I'm not saying that Washington should play in a 20,000 person stadium. I'm just saying, like, grow 10. The stadium. Yeah, or even like 8. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's potential there. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think Washington playing in a relatively tiny stadium, I mean, I say relatively tiny. There are some high schools here in Texas that probably have bigger basketball stadiums than 4,200 seats. Atlanta's another one that I think of that has a pretty small stadium, just from what it looks like on TV. Dallas even.
Right. Dallas is about 8,000. Mm-hmm. But like Dallas, they're planning on moving to downtown.
Right. That's in 2 years.
In 2 years. Yep. So I am curious if we'll see that number grow just with stadiums growing.
Yep.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll
but
see.
As there are more seats, the cost also goes down too. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Yep.
I found the number on the charters.
Okay. What you got?
So they said that when they announced it, they'll commit $50 million over the next 2 years to provide full-time charter flight services. So you were right. It was about $25,000
per year.
Okay, or so $25 million, sorry.
So you just take away charters alone, and now they've cut closer. Their losses in half,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm a player, though, I'm sitting here going, hey, I don't know if it's worth it. Flying charter is pretty nice. I mean,
when
I worked with the University of Oklahoma women's basketball team, we chartered it everywhere, and it was fantastic. You don't have to go through security. Your bus pulls right up to the plane on the tarmac. You literally walk down the bus steps, up the plane steps, hop in your seat, and you go.
You save a lot of time, for just security purposes,
exactly.
You don't have to go through the airport have people, you know, mess with you or talk to
people
you.
People like Brittany Griner and Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Plum, like, they don't want to be bothered in the airport, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't either.
No. Well, and they're professional athletes, so it's just like that's what they deserve. But just interesting. So you said that's a loss of $50 million this year?
$50 million loss this season alone.
This season alone. Well, what I would be interested to see is what their losses were last year.
That would be
we'll have to look that up.
Yeah. I mean, even with all this increased viewership and TV. Oh, here's another thing I found interesting that I found in this research. So I thought that maybe the WNBA had a separate TV deal, if you will, from the NBA, and they were kind of making separate money.
Mm.
Well, it turns out the NBA's TV deal is kind of tied hand in hand with the WNBA. So they aren't actually making any extra money, if you will, from TV viewership. Does that make sense?
Really?
Because most of these games are aired on the WNBA network or other similar networks that are owned by the NBA. So,
interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the NBA network, how a lot of NBA games are shown on that and other kind of analytics TV shows, that kind of thing.
As an accountant, I would like to see the budget. I'd like to see the spending. Super curious.
Given the very limited information we know, what would your accountant advice be for the WNBA right now?
I don't know. I don't know their budget.
Okay.
It's not to pay the players less. Because they're already getting none.
You're right.
I mean
you're
that's
right.
Nothing.
They're already getting, for professional athletes, they're already getting essentially nothing.
Well, okay, right. And here's, I'm looking at an article, and I don't know the credibility of it, but it looks like the NBA, this is back in 2018, current NBA commissioner Adam Silver said that the WNBA has never once turned a profit, and they lose approximately $10 million a year and lost $12 million in 2017.
Huh.
So why in 2017 are they only losing $12 million, but
now
they're losing $50 million? Even if you cut out the $25 million charter, that's still more
25.
Than $12 million.
Yeah. Interesting. Inflation?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to see that. You're right.
I'd also just like to see what the league brought in revenue, how that trends. Because I mean, with more attention, there are probably going to be more expenses to grow the league, but I would be interested to see how just flat revenue compares, because I imagine it's got to be higher.
Yeah, I do think I remember reading that it might be next year or the year after the league is up for a new TV deal. So I wonder if that will kind of change things. I know I'm pretty sure it's after this season. The collective bargaining agreement with the players is up for like renegotiation. So that those two things alone could change quite a bit in the WNBA landscape as far as, you know, revenues being brought in, how that's distributed. You
know, I know our league margins. Our league pass is probably going to be a little more expensive than $35.
Yep, get your pocketbooks ready. You might be paying 50 plus inflation.
What's next?
Next, honestly, I didn't have very much left. That was really it. I mean, another one of these increased viewership stats was at the WNBA app, which I didn't even know existed. Usage was up 613% year over year.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty big. Actually, I did download it because...
What's on this app?
Downloaded it because I wanted to watch a game.
Oh, you can watch games on the app?
I think you have to pay for it. I think I had to pay for a league pass or something.
Okay, so you can log in with like your league pass on the app and use that essentially to watch
games. Think so. Okay. I don't know. Okay. I downloaded it because it just like one of the very first games I wanted to see, and I don't even know if I... Actually, I am pretty sure I watched it on... So maybe I didn't have to pay for it. I don't remember.
It's a nationally televised
game. But you know what? I downloaded it. So it's like...
Well, there you go. You're part of that 613%.
I guess so. I actually had an interesting thing
what you got?
That someone requested is just to look at the number of rookies that were drafted that made the team.
Okay.
So, which is kind of interesting. We're talking a lot about rookies, but it's like, how many are there from the draft? So there are three rounds in the draft, right? And so 12 teams. Right. 12 teams or 12 picks, I guess. Right. So in round one, 9 out of 12 made a team. The three individuals who did not make the team, it looked like two elected to go play overseas this year. Huh. I don't know if it was a mutual agreement or if they just decided on their own.
Were they already foreign players? Do you know?
Yes. Okay. Yes. They were foreign players. And then one just said that they didn't make a team. And so maybe they
got it.
So anyway, those were the three who are not on WNBA teams. In round two, only 3 out of 12 made the team. Okay. Wow. Three picks made their team. So that is Nika Mule, who we know is on Seattle's team.
Yep.
She was the number two pick in that round.
Okay.
Okay. Celeste Taylor was the number three pick. She plays for the Fever.
Yep.
She got her first points in the WNBA this past week. Yep. Go Celeste. And then last but certainly not least is the beloved Kate Martin. And she was number six pick in that round. So in round three, not one person made a team.
So basically what
in the draft.
Basically what I'm hearing is if you're not drafted in the first round of the WNBA, it's essentially a death sentence and you are the odds are stacked against you.
I'm sure your name gets out there, like it's maybe televised and maybe you get some good contacts and then maybe you have better opportunities overseas. Mm-hmm. But like after round two, especially if you get picked in round three, like you should probably not be moving cities because you're probably not going to make the team.
If you get drafted round three, is it even worth going to training camp at that point? Like,
I mean, come on. You have to go to training camp.
Okay, and just give it a shot because you never know.
But, I mean, I just wouldn't put all your marbles in one basket saying.
I'd probably have my agent working some side deals in Europe while I'm in training camp is what I would say.
I just thought that was interesting. So that's all I got, though.
So do you think that another question, do you think WNBA should just do away with the third round? Like, is it pointless?
I would have said yes if they were not planning to expand the league.
Okay.
So I will be interested to see in, what is it, 2 years from now, two seasons from now, when they expand the league, if we are going to see more of these stick.
Interesting. I would also be interested to see if there is a wave of players that are of a certain age range that all start retiring at the same time. and suddenly all these roster spots empty out, so to speak, and allow newer, younger players that get drafted to come in and take those positions.
Right. You know what or I'm saying? Are we going to see just more people from overseas or, who maybe didn't get selected for a team this year, next year, following year, you know, and then honestly, they're going like to come back over.
I would like to see more women overseas playing over here. We see it with the men all the time. The NBA is the best league in the world for men's basketball. I think you can make a very good argument that the WNBA is the best league in the world for women's basketball, since all the USA players come from it, and they've been the best team in the Olympics for 9 straight Olympics or something like that.
But you're saying you would like to see foreign players?
Yeah, like I want to see more foreign players get the opportunity. Like I think that maybe WNBA scouts or whoever it is in their organizations need to be looking out more, because look, there are overseas players all over the world, like in Europe, in Asia, in South America, even in Africa. There have got to be players out there that are good and real good and can handle their own in the WNBA.
I think there are some.
Yeah, and I think they deserve the chance to play against the best. Like Vanloo for Washington, for instance. She's considered a rookie this year because it's her first year in the league, but she's 31, I believe, 30 or 31, has been playing in Europe. This is the first shot she's gotten, and she's, you know, as far as professional athletes go, middle way through her career.
Right. Yeah. No, that's interesting. I was more talking about women who graduate from college, but then they don't make the team now, but really they just needed a couple years of maybe some professional experience, and then they come back and play in the WNBA.
I see what you're saying.
That's where I was going, but I understand your point too.
Okay. Sorry. Well, we covered a lot tonight. Thanks for joining us. As always, we are the Wyatts here on the Crossover Conversations podcast. I am Devin.
And I'm Katie.
We'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining us.